This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. And June is Pride Month, the time of year when many of us reflect on the past, present, and future of LGBTQ people and communities. This weekend, actually, is the annual Pride Parade in Chicago. More than a million people usually converge on the city every year to show their pride, or at least their support for a community that still faces many problems. But for all the focus on that community in our urban areas, a 2019 report from the nonprofit Movement Advancement Project and some other organizations estimated there are around 3 million people in the LGBTQ community who live in rural areas across the country. There are upsides and downsides to living in rural areas, of course, but when you're LGBTQ, the isolation and the politics can make it a lot harder to survive, let alone thrive. Despite that, LGBTQ people in those communities are finding ways to support one another. So for the rest of today's show, we're going to talk about some of the ways that's happening here in Illinois. A few years ago, the Queer-Oriented Rural Resources Network got started here in Illinois. I'm going to spell that out, Q-O-R-R-N, and yes, it is pronounced corn for short. As the full name applies, implies, it aims to connect LGBTQ people in rural communities to supportive resources in their area. The organization is based in DeKalb, and the founder is Frankie DiCiaccio, who joins me now. Frankie, welcome to the 21st Show.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
One organization in southern Illinois that helps support rural people is Rainbow Cafe in Carbondale, and that's been around since the year 2000. Executive director there is Carrie Vine. She's also a licensed clinical social worker. Carrie, welcome to you as well.
Hey, good morning. Thank you so much for having me as well.
And finally, Pride events and organizations by and for the LGBTQ community have been popping up across the state in recent years, not just in our bigger cities. In central Illinois, Logan County Pride held its fourth annual festival earlier this month. Tristan Carrick-Woods is its vice president. Tristan, thank you for making the time.
Of course. Thanks, Brian. Thanks for having us.
So, Frankie, I'm going to start with you, and I should say 800-222-9455 if you want to join our conversation today. We're talking about this for the rest of the hour, 800-222-9455. Frankie, I want to begin with you. You're based in what would certainly be a rural area compared to Chicago, but talk me through your experience of moving to and living in your part of the state.
Sure. So I had lived most of my adult life in big cities before coming to DeKalb, and there was a real adjustment period for me when I got here. I felt it sort of in my body, the way I carried myself. One of the real differences between an urban area and a rural area that kind of defines the two is just how many people are around. And in an urban area, I could sort of blend in, disappear into the crowd a bit more. But here in DeKalb, I felt myself kind of sticking out, maybe being a little bit more noticeable. And that kind of made me nervous at first. But the more time I spent here, I realized that I wasn't alone. And you referenced at the top the Movement Advancement Project's report, Where We Call Home, about queer people living in rural America. And reading that and sort of hearing and listening to other queer people in the rural sphere, it sort of showed me my own, what you might call metro normativity, my own assumptions around the rural-urban divide. And so while you're a little bit more visible in a rural area, you aren't alone. And that was one of the real driving forces behind me starting CORN.
Metronormativity, that's an interesting phrase. Carrie, let's build on that. What are some of the other ups and downs that come with being LGBT in a rural area?
Sure. Well, in Carbondale, where we are located, we have a little bit of a liberal bubble here in Carbondale, because we have, you know, SIU, the university here, and we're known to be pretty progressive as far as a town's concerned. I will say, though, when you go out of Carbondale, it's a little bit more noticeable. So we have a lot of people that really kind of congregate in Carbondale, and then going further out, like even just 20 minutes away, it's a little bit different. And the notice, it is very noticeable, the difference of being there. Like Frankie said, it's kind of a palpable difference, of being a little different. Like I'm heavily tattooed. You can't see me, but I am. And so it's a little, it's noticeable. So those are differences that you notice when you're out in the community versus being in Carbondale, which is more progressive. It's kind of a safer area, or being in a Chicago or Springfield or something like that. So yeah.
Yeah, no, I've said this before, but there are parts of southern Illinois that are closer to Mississippi than Chicago, physically and in other ways. Tristan, I want to bring you into the conversation now with Logan County Pride. So I understand you've been in Logan County all your life, and if you're comfortable with talking about your own experiences, that'd be great. But just from your point of view in general, what difference does it make to find a community in an area like yours?
Yeah, I was very much resonating on what Frankie was saying about this feeling of sticking out. And as you mentioned, I'm born and raised here in Lincoln, Illinois. Lived a large majority of my life in Logan County, and that theme kind of stuck true of sticking out, of always feeling like I was the odd one. I ended up coming out in high school, which was an interesting experience because I had to take on the stressors of being in high school and being a hormonal teenager, but now also this sexual identity that I had that caused things to kind of shift and relationships to shift. And that was really hard, and it took a big toll on my mental health. There were a lot of things that a lot of times that I felt that I didn't have anybody I could talk to. I felt that there weren't things that existed for me. And that often led to this thought that I had to move to a larger city to feel included and to experience that equality, right? And I did, and I moved to Phoenix right at the start of COVID and lived out there for a while, loved it, but in the bottom of my heart there was something that was missing, and that could only be filled by a rural community. And so I ended up moving back, and when I got back, I wanted to change the narrative. I wanted to create something that didn't that allowed for the opportunity for people who are like me, who are out in rural communities, to have visibility, to not feel like they're sticking out. And so I ended up joining Logan County Pride, and have built it since then to really increase that visibility. Increase the resources that we have access to, and really hopefully change the narrative of rural communities and how queer people interact with that.
Yeah. All right. We need to take a break. We are going to continue this conversation. We are talking about how Illinoisans commemorate Pride, especially in rural areas, and some of the communities that people have built up in those areas for LGBTQ people. We are talking about this with Tristan Carrick Woods, Vice President of Logan County Pride, Carrie Vine, Executive Director of Carbondale's Rainbow Cafe, and Frankie DiCiaccio, founder of Corn. More to come after a short break. Stay with us. This is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey, and we are talking about how people in Illinois commemorate Pride, especially in rural areas, and just in general, how LGBTQ communities have built up in the more remote parts of Illinois. We're talking about this with Carrie Vine, Executive Director of Carbondale's Rainbow Cafe, Tristan Carrick Woods, Vice President of Logan County Pride, and Frankie DiCiaccio, Founder and Director of the Queer-Oriented Rural Resources Network, or CORN, which is based here in Illinois. You can join us at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Do you notice a support, I should say a difference in support for people who are LGBTQ between urban and rural areas? How do you think that compares to a decade ago, 2 decades, 3 decades ago? And especially if you identify as being a part of the LGBTQ community. Or an ally. Do you feel safe celebrating this year? The number again, 800-222-9455. All right, Frankie, I mentioned the resources as part of your group's title. I want to ask about that. So what do we talk about? So obviously, I think people think of healthcare providers, physical health, mental health. I'm guessing there's more to it than that. So what comes to mind for you when we're talking about local LGBTQ resources?
Sure. So I think one of the parts of this work that's been really wonderful is to see how interconnected a lot of these things are. So if you go to CORN and you click on our local or state resources, we have about 40 service categories. They're broken into three kind of main chunks. So there's community and support, legal services, and then medical treatment, which probably should be renamed. But across those, it's everything from sort of community-specific support. So you can filter resources by if you are an immigrant and you're looking for specifically immigration queer services or resources, you can filter that way. If you're looking for support, if you're a same-sex couple looking to adopt, you can filter by adoption and foster care. The goal is to find resources that cover a wide variety because there are no monoliths. The queer community certainly isn't a monolith, and our needs aren't monolithic. We're all individuals. And so it's been wonderful to see, oh, here's something kind of unexpected. At one point in the research, I found a construction company that was run by two trans women. And if you need, some construction done in your home and you're queer, that might offer you a sense of comfort, a sense of ease that you might not get by hiring someone whose sort of stance or openness to your queerness you don't know, right? So it's a wide variety and it interconnects with and overlaps all sorts of things. I mean, at the beginning of the hour, you were talking about abortion care, that kind of bodily autonomy, that question around access to reproductive health is just as much an issue for members of the queer communities as it is for members of non-queer communities. So it's pretty broad and wide, I'd say.
One other thing I wanted to ask you about, Frankie, is, so these resources have grown in areas like DeKalb, Northern Illinois, but you still have Chicago nearby. In a community like yours, is there still a reliance on resources from bigger areas, Howard Brown Health in Chicago, for example?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one goal of CORN, it's not to say that there's anything wrong with going to a city, that there's anything wrong with going to Howard Brown. It provides critical care for tons of people each year. But we don't want it to feel like you have to, like you need to leave where you are to be who you are. And so zeroing in on local resources, I think this goes back to what Tristan was talking about, that sense of leaving and then realizing, oh, I actually miss where I was. I like being in the town I was in. I just want to know I'll be supported while I'm there. So CORN is trying to signal boost those local resources so that they're more easy to find. They can, we're trying to connect the people who could use the services with the service providers so that they don't feel that imperative to leave home in order to get the services they need or to be who they are.
Carrie, I wanted to ask you about that. How much so, is there an effort to build up, homegrown resources as opposed to things where people would have to travel? Especially where I would, in Southern Illinois, St. Louis used to be a destination for people seeking gender-affirming care, for example. But Missouri is really changing the landscape with that, with its changes in laws. So how are you thinking about that and building up local resources over time?
Yeah, that's really funny that you brought that up because with Choices Reproductive Center moving up here from Memphis, that's given us access to gender affirming care and abortion care, like we talked about, bodily autonomy care. And then Planned Parenthood just recently opened in January. They had their ribbon cutting service. And so that's kind of opened up a lot of our medical services. And then we also had some gender affirming care providers through an FQHC, Shawnee Healthcare, great care. But it's overwhelming the amount of people that need to come here now seeking care from places like Tennessee. And Texas, and you name it. So one of the things that Rainbow Cafe has done is we actually expanded and we're opening our behavioral health center very soon. Because one of the things that we have found that is needed the most is mental health care for LGBTQ people, especially within the transgender community, trans youth. That population is especially underserved when it comes to mental health care. So we're exploring those. We're going to do the behavioral health center that's going to be Medicaid certified and have in place just a system where people can come and get the care and the affirming care that they need right here in Carbondale, because the closest place for us is, a few hours away, lots of time. So we felt really strongly about just making sure that the people had the care they needed here as much as possible. So that's something that we've done and that we're hoping to have up and running very, very soon.
Tristan Kirk Woods, I want to come back to you. So let's come back to the idea of a pride celebration. I mentioned at the beginning of our conversation, people go up to Chicago. There's literally expected to be a million people at Pride. Every major politician, at least Democratic politician in Illinois, feels a need to hit that parade. How does it manifest in Logan County? I'm guessing not quite that number of attendance.
Yeah, no. We're definitely a lot smaller, and I think that's to our benefit a lot of the times. But it still is a sense of community and a sense of belonging. Every event that we have, there are several people who come up to us who start the conversation off by saying, "I didn't know Logan County had this. I didn't know this pride existed," and that's where we get to, truly shine it and show off all the cool things that we're doing and a lot of the resources that we do have access to. And I always tell people, everybody knows about Chicago Pride, everybody knows about St. Louis Pride, but a lot of people don't know about the smaller prides. And we really should be paying attention to them because they're very important and I think will help shape the future of our political climate, but also the future of of just generally queer people and our existence. And so I always joke to people that in the same manner that you can get on a train and go up to Chicago, on the same way you can get on the train and go down to St. Louis, you can get on the same train and go right to Lincoln, walk 2 blocks and you're at our Pride Festival, right? And that holds true for so many things. Yes, we are rural. Yes, it is much smaller, but at the end of the day, it's about the people who come together to celebrate Pride, to really access that history, and begin building that sense of community throughout the entire county, through the entire Central Illinois, Greater Illinois, Greater United States, right? So I think that's really important of how we manifest it here in Lone County. It's smaller, but it still holds a lot of the same things that Chicago does.
Frankie, I want to ask you about that. A text we got from someone in Mount Zion who wanted to stay anonymous, and I guess maybe is not quite found the same supportive community we've been talking about. They said, "I identify as a member of the LGBT community and am closeted at work because of the open hate speech I hear from my coworkers daily. I am terrified to reveal my true self around them and have to code switch at work. I try to be an open ally to those that are out about their identities, but it is hard in rural Illinois." First, thank you to the anonymous person who shared that with us. Frankie, this is still, in many respects, a challenging time to be LGBTQ, although obviously better than it was 20, 30, 50 years ago. I wonder if you still hear often sentiments like what that person shared, and how do you try to make those areas more welcoming and turn the clock forward on that?
Yeah, absolutely. So, one thing that comes to mind is, in 2020, the Supreme Court was considering whether or not Title VII of the 1964 Civil Rights Act protected gay and transgender workers from employment discrimination. And at the time, I think anyone watching the court was pretty convinced they were going to say, no, it doesn't protect you. But actually, they went the other way, really somewhat unexpectedly. So at the, federal level, there are protections rooted in this 1964 Civil Rights Act that says you can't be fired or discriminated against for being gay or transgender. But at the federal level, that may exist, but that doesn't necessarily make its way to individuals in their experience at work, living in a smaller area, a more conservative area, just like what our anonymous texter has said. And so I think that this really amplifies and goes to the things that Carrie and Tristan have been saying. Corn is part of the DeKalb Pride Festival, and I think after the 2021 Pride event, a young person came up to me and said something along the lines of, "I told my parents I was going to a friend's, and I didn't say where I was, where I was actually going, because I think they would have, they wouldn't have been hospitable, or they wouldn't have supported it. But I'm so glad I came, and I really didn't know this was here." And I think that that just speaks to the value of visible queerness in these smaller communities, in these more sparsely populated areas. If our person who's texted in had an ally at work, someone who they felt comfortable with, that might really be a game changer for them. And I'm so sorry that's their experience. That's terrible. No one should, feel like they have to really hide themselves day in and day out like that. But it is the truth for many of us. And so I think the more we offer these visible examples of healthy, joyful queerness, where you don't expect to find it, the more we're helping change the narrative and hopefully create a world where people like this person who texted in can feel supported.
Frankie DiCiaccio is founder and director of the Queer Oriented Rural Resources Network based here in Illinois. Carrie Vine is executive director of the Rainbow Cafe in Carbondale. And Tristan Carrick-Woods is vice president of Logan County Pride. Frankie, Carrie, Tristan, thank you so much for being with us today on the 21st Show.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you.
Of course, thank you. It's a pleasure being here.
And that is all the time we have for our show today. Coming up tomorrow, the Invisible Institute is a nonprofit Illinois-based news organization that's recently won a number of awards, including a Peabody and two Pulitzer Prizes. We'll talk with the reporters behind several of their award-winning stories about Chicago and Champaign. That's all coming up tomorrow on the 21st Show. You can join our texting group by sending the word TALK to 217-803-0730. You heard comments from listeners throughout the program today. Again, TALK to 217-803-0730. It's a great way to participate. If you don't want to call in, you don't want to have your voice on air, or maybe you just don't get to listen live, you listen to one of our rebroadcasts or our podcast, you can still participate by joining our texting group. You can find out how to do that or subscribe to our podcast all through our website, 21stshow.org. The 21st Show is produced by Christine Hatfield and Jose Zepeda. Our digital producer is Stephanie Mosqueda. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.